welcome everybody into the ESPN FC studios for this, the latest edition of the show, alongside Casey Keller, Steve Nichol. I'm Sebastian Salazar. Great to have you with us. We do have a lot to get to as we get ready to look forward to the weekend that will be. But first, some Friday night football out of Italy. Your league leaders, Inter Milan, destroying last place Salernitana 4-0. Marcus Thuram opening the scoring in the 17th minute. That was followed with goals by Lautaro, Denzel Dumfries, and Arnautovic as Inter Milan rolled to pick up the full 3 points. What does that mean? Atop the Serie A table, will Inter now 10 points clear of their nearest chasers, Juventus, in second place. For more on this, let's welcome into the show our good friend and colleague, Don Hutchison. Don, you call Serie A matches every week. So based on what you've seen so far this season, just how good was Inter today?
They've been great all season, Sebi. They're unbeaten in 18, one of the best records in European football. Inzaghi's got them playing unbelievable football. I mean, nearly perfect, as close as you can say to perfection, because you can set your clock on what he does on an hour mark. He's got four unbelievable wing-backs, so he rotates them, bang on the hour mark. He takes his star men off when they're winning 3-0 or 4-0. He's done that seven times this season. Inter, when they beat teams by more than four, they rest them for the Champions League, so it's the perfect night. And what they are, and when I say they're like the perfect side, they've got a goalkeeper in Jan Sommer who's always been very, very good, very solid. They've got three defenders who like to defend. They've got great, great footballers in midfield. I mean, do you remember Brozovic, who went to Saudi for the money? Çalhanoğlu, who's now playing in that number six role, and he's been on fire. He's just controlling things in midfield. Barella, I thought, was close to man of the match tonight. And then you've got Marcus Thuram and Lautaro Martinez, who's now hit 20 for the season. So when you watch them play, how they can slow the game down, they can keep hold of the ball. When they need to speed it up, they can. They've got pace and attack. They've got goals everywhere. And they are a sensational side to watch. They are 10 points clear and nailed on for the title.
Stevie, I feel like you've been a bit of an Inter Milan skeptic in the past. Let's start with the positive, though. What was the big takeaway? What was their strength for you today, either as a collective or individually?
No, I think the strength is a collective, no question. You know, I'm not so sure that Jan Sommer's the perfect answer in goal. Mm-hmm. But they are a team. They are a unit. They flow when they need to. I mean, I saw them against Juventus a couple of weeks ago, and when they had to shut it down, they shut it down. So this team looks as though, regardless of the way the games or the opposition want to play the game, they're capable of doing it. If it's a battle, they look as though they can do it. They've got loads and loads of experience. I mean, you could say that some of the better players are a little long in the tooth, but they're a real team. You know, the scepticism I have is that I'm not keen on the goalie, and I think against better teams, Çalhanoğlu and Mkhitaryan in the middle of the park are not going to do enough defensively to stop a Man City, for example. But this is a real team. They play as a unit, and they're great to watch.
In a couple of days, it won't be Salernitana. It'll be Atletico Madrid in the Champions League. How do you see that going?
Yeah, I think Inter probably have to be just a little bit favored. Atletico have been, you know, I've called Atletico a bunch of times this year, and you just never quite know what Atletico is going to give you. Mm-hmm. They're no longer that we're going to grind out the 1-0. I mean, you knew that a couple years ago, right? That this is who Atletico is going to be. You're going to be in a fight. It's going to be potentially maybe the 90th minute, and they're going to get their one goal, and they're going to win 1-0. This is a different Atletico Madrid, who's far more progressive in the attack, but in doing that, they concede a lot more goals because of it. So it'll be interesting to see how kind of Simeone, does he fall back on, we're playing a team that looks very balanced, very, very good in the way they attack with the numbers out wide and obviously up front. So then do they default to Atletico Madrid of 18 months ago? Or is it just a straight up, we're going to try to outscore more goals than you, which I think would favor Inter right now.
Mm. Inzaghi versus Simeone, you love that matchup?
Yeah, I prefer Inzaghi myself.
Really?
You can tell the way.
Mm-hmm.
Well, look at the way Inter play the game. As I said, if they want to rough it up, they can, but they play nice attacking football. The ball's moving all the time. There's good movement everywhere. Yeah, I absolutely. I think Simeone's going to have to earn his big wage packet in this game. Or these two ties.
Yeah. You think he goes conservative in that first leg away?
I think the line of confrontation's conservative, but I think once they actually get the ball, they'll do what Inter do and they'll try and open up and get at you. But they'll obviously, when they lose the ball, do what good Italian sides still do, and that's close in ranks and stop Atletico Madrid. I think it's big time that Morata's going to be out.
Yeah. Yep.
I think that is
That'll
huge.
Hurt
yeah, sure. That's if I'm Inter, I'm rubbing my hands. I mean, who's taking his place? He's their goal scorer. So you got to look after Griezmann. If you do that, you're in the
Memphis
driver's
Depay
seat.
Memphis Depay has popped up recently to score more goals, but it's definitely
but like the team, you yeah, can't rely it, no, on them, can you?
And Morata has really kind of turned the corner of having that kind of stigma of missing too many easy chances. So yes, I mean it. No question, Atletico, in the right frame of mind, in the right mood, can beat Inter. No question about it. But I think Inter's been just that bit more consistent this year.
Don, who are you taking to advance between these two?
I'm taking Inter because I've seen them far more times than I have Atletico Madrid, and I'm like
what
Casey.
Kind of reasoning
the Atletico
is that?
Madrid. No. I think the Atletico Madrid of 4 or 5 years ago, they were solid. They were like they shut everything down and win 1-0. I think since then, I think they've lost their DNA. I think they tried to go a little bit more expansive and a bit more open. I don't think it suits the manager. I don't think it suits the team. Don't think it sometimes suits the individuals. It looks nice on paper, but they're going to have to be resilient. I think to answer your question before, when you said, what will it be like in the first tie? I think Atleti have to shut it down. I think they have to go there with a really, not a negative mindset, but in the mindset of, we are not letting Inter get the first tie and let it get away from us. Because if Inter turn it on, Atletico don't turn up, Inter could hit them for 2 or 3 and the tie could be over. So they've got to make sure the second leg is still there to be played.
Sounds like you're telling me to take the under. That's what I'm hearing, at least in the first leg there. Speaking of odds, here's a look at the overall odds for the Champions League. What are they giving Inter here? 14-1. That makes them sixth favorite. Don, that's
it's
a pretty
ridiculous.
Good value for Inter, isn't it?
It's ridiculous. I mean, how on earth? We had this conversation before. How are Arsenal in a better place than Inter? Inter were on for the treble last season. They got in the Champions League final. They're unbeaten in 18. They're 10 points clear of Serie A, but yet Arsenal are third favourites. I mean, honestly, I'm staggered. I'm staggered. I don't know why Inter don't get more love and more attention.
I think you picked the wrong argument, Don. I think you picked the wrong one to argue with.
Well, you think Bayern is the one we should be knocking down, not Arsenal.
Bayern PSG should be nowhere ahead of Inter. I don't think Arsenal's the one to argue about.
Okay.
If anything, it may be close, but I would still back Arsenal.
So you're basically putting Inter second or third favourite. You're moving them up.
I would have Inter fourth. I would have them behind Arsenal.
Okay.
I don't understand why Bayern and PSG can be ahead of Inter.
What do you think?
I think it's an either or, but yeah. But it's I agree with Stevie for sure on the Bayern and PSG, and I think Arsenal are trending in the right direction right now. But it yeah, I mean it's difficult to look at this Inter team and the form they're in. I know today was a really tough day to judge because they played against the last place team and they steamrolled them in the first 15 minutes and the game was over. But you're looking at kind of what they did. I think maybe some of that is because they came in second in their group. Is that right?
Yes.
To Real Sociedad.
Yep.
So maybe they just have been knocked down a little bit because of kind of group form.
Don? Last word of this on you. What do you think of what Stevie said about Inter in the pecking order?
I think he's right in terms of PSG and Bayern, but I'd still take Inter over Arsenal any day of the week. Their current form, what they've done in the Champions League over the last couple of years, I have them well ahead of Arsenal.
Well ahead.
Oof.
Well ahead. Did you hear that?
Oh, hey.
Well, Champions League finalists and on for a treble last season.
There you go. And he does watch a lot of Serie A, so that weighs in quite a bit. Of course, we all watch a lot of Serie A here on ESPN FC, which is available 7 days a week here on ESPN Plus. We'll, of course, be back in this studio tomorrow covering all the action from across Europe.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at electricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's electricebikes.com.
We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't a search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What are they saying in France? Here's the cover of L'Equipe. Of course, Kylian Mbappe getting ready to make that move from Paris to Madrid. It's decided, I'm leaving you.
He's not going, is he?
I mean, who knows? Jules only broke the news, what, 2.5 weeks ago?
Really fell off my chair there.
All right, Don, stick with me here, right? PSG had Messi, they had Neymar, and they had Mbappe, and it didn't work. Yeah. Is there any way that Mbappe going to Real Madrid similarly doesn't work?
No, I can't see it. The talent that he's going to have around him, the likes of Rodrigo, the likes of Vinny Jr., the likes of Bellingham, Camavinga, Tchouameni, I mean, Toni Kroos, Luka Modric, Valverde. I mean, he should be getting chances. He creates chances on his own. He's that good. And I think this is a move that'll, I think, enhance his legacy. I think going to Real Madrid when he's a success will deliver more Ballon d'Ors for him. Jules is the go-to man when you're talking Kylian Mbappe and Paris Saint-Germain. Knows the details inside out. There's no way he's coming to England. I mean, everyone at Arsenal, everyone in England is dreaming that he might come to the Premier League and Arsenal and Liverpool. It ain't going to happen. You know, he's forfeiting 80 million in bonuses from PSG. He'll make that up at the other end. He's 100% going to Real Madrid. And I can only see him being a success. It reminds me of a little bit of a younger Galacticos. Galacticos back in the day, I mean, ridiculous talent, unbelievable players. But now they're doing it with younger players, like we said, with Vinny Jr. and Rodrigo and Kylian Mbappe and Jude Bellingham and Valverde. I mean, Man City are the team to beat, but you cannot sleep on what Real Madrid are going to be doing this season and in the coming season, because all those young players, apart from Luka Modric and Toni Kroos, could be playing together for the next 5 to 8 years.
So, Stevie, I know yesterday or maybe recently you were kind of making the argument that we shouldn't focus on how they're going to set up. It's going to work itself out. Yeah. They're going to be fluid players.
Yeah.
But somebody's going to have to put out a starting formation. You're the only coach we have on the panel here. So give us your Real Madrid 11. How would you set this team up with Mbappe in it?
I think I would have two up front. I would have him and Vinny Jr. I think, unfortunately, Rodrigo would have to sit. Because you can't... I mean, Bellingham has been absolutely lights-out sensational. Mm-hmm. So are you really going to change your whole team round when you've got a guy from midfield scoring, what is it, 24 goals he's got so far?
Yeah, explain that. So by taking Rodrigo out and moving Mbappe
well,
wide...
If you play Rodrigo, Mbappe and Vinny, then you're going to have to drop Bellingham in, and he's not going to be as free as he's been. So why would you take goals away?
Was it worth sacrificing all of Rodrigo for a little bit of Jude?
No, you're sacrificing Rodrigo for the good of the team and to keep exploiting what you have in Bellingham. At the same time, you've still got two superstars playing alongside him.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that to me, that sticks out big time. I don't see how you change the way you're playing. You just don't. It makes no sense to have your top man moved because of another signing, when you can keep your top man in the same place and make the team better by having your two guys up front. And as I said, the movement would be fluid, because when Real Madrid get the ball and when these guys get the ball, that's what they do, they play. It's like going back to school. Mm-hmm. It's playground stuff when these guys get the ball. Now, when you lose it, and I think the other thing actually that's going to help Mbappe He's going to look around. He's going to see Vinny Jr. chasing people. He's going to see Bellingham chasing people. The culture at Real Madrid is we all have to do a bit of work. That can only be good for Mbappe. He's used to being at PSG with Neymar and Messi and everybody else where they get away with it. So he's going to get away with it. I mean, it's kind of scary what could possibly be next season when this guy joins Real Madrid.
You asked the question about PSG and how come they didn't win.
Right.
Well, because you still need the same mentality. You have to have a balance throughout the pitch. You can't just say, here's a whole bunch of great players. We're going to throw the ball out there and we're just going to beat teams. Look, you're going to beat really bad teams. But when you're playing against another good team that has that balance between attacking, winning the ball back higher up the pitch, players on the pitch that aren't looking to stroke their own ego, they're doing the difficult work, but you still need your stars to buy in and help. And if you have groups of guys, two or three guys, and you're defending two or three guys down against a very good team, you can't make up for that.
Don, Rodrigo, the odd man out, what do you think?
I mean, listen, I don't think there's any right and wrong answer. I mean, I went slightly different than what Stevie's done, but there's no right and no wrong. I mean, I don't see why Camavinga can't play midfield in the two with Valverde. And then you've got Bellingham as a 10, Rodrigo right, Mbappe through the middle, Vinny Jr. left. So, listen, it's one of them where you put an 11 down on paper and Ancelotti will tweak it and he'll look at it and he'll think for the greater good of the team, he'll pick the best 11. But honestly, I mean, my word, that the talent pool to pick from is incredible. Add potentially Alphonso Davies this time or in the summer. That's a potential move that might happen as well. So all of a sudden you're looking at what could be one of the best teams that we've seen for quite a while.
How do you break this to Rodrigo then from the managerial perspective? Because that's going to be a tough pill to swallow. I mean, he's been incredibly productive this year, carried the team when Vinny was out.
To be honest, it's up to Rodrigo how he takes it. You know, it's very difficult.
Put yourself in his shoes. How would you take it? Certainly can't make the argument that he's been played out of a job.
Well, you got to, any chance you get on the field, you've got to put yourself in a position where he can't drop you. Well, I mean, that's it. That's the bottom line. And if you don't, do that.
But this is the thing that's happening off the field.
If you don't do that, then and you're not happy with it, then you might have to go. I mean, that's just the bottom line, because you can only play 11 players. And if you play three up front and you want to change Bellingham's role, then you can play this guy. Are you going to sacrifice the team to not hurt this guy's feelings or not upset this guy? He's got to take it in a certain way as a professional. He doesn't have to like it. Mm-hmm. And you'd be disappointed if you're the coach if he did like it. But he's going to have to be professional about it. And if he can't stomach it, then you know what? You go out and sell him for 50, 60 mil.
Yeah.
And you bring a younger player in again. And then you start bringing him along.
But it's
just a fact of life.
But you have to keep a squad as well, because you're going to have injuries. Yep. You're going to have
tons of games.
Fix your congestion. Yep. And you're going to have to keep enough guys happy that you got to have. It's still Real Madrid. You don't expect somebody to come off the bench who's a nobody. So there should be enough balance to where you can have some stars on the bench as well. But again, it's a conversation. It's a difficulty knowing that you went from being in the starting 11 to them making a huge splash in the market to bring somebody in who. Yeah. But again,
he's 23. That's the time of your career you want.
But Seb, if we had a poll right now and you said, who's a better player, Rodrigo or Kylian Mbappe?
Yeah, of course.
I mean, okay, so Real Madrid is strengthening their squad.
I can only play so much devil's advocate here.
But they're strengthening their squad, and somebody is going to have to pay the price for it.
Don mentioned it, Alphonso Davies. Yeah, Endrick as well. But Alphonso Davies looks like he's got a deal in place, reportedly, with Real Madrid to leave Bayern Munich. He's got a contract with Bayern Munich through 2025. You've followed this player from the jump, you know, MLS and the beginnings of his career. You think this is the right fit, a good fit for him?
Well, I mean, is it a wrong fit going to Real Madrid if Real Madrid wants you?
I mean, he's got it pretty good right now at Bayern Munich, some would say.
He does, but I'm really interested to see, because when Alphonso went to Bayern Munich, you know, he went as a winger, as an attacking player. And they identified that maybe he's not as strong in that position, but we love the athleticism. Let's put him more as an outside back, wing back, and just use that tremendous amount of pace. Now, I think he's learned to defend better. So I'll be interested to see if he does end up going to Real Madrid. Just, you know, how much freedom does he have? Is he going to go take up a space that Vinny Jr. wants to go work in? Or is it more of a support role and being said, okay, I'll feed you some balls and I'll use my pace that if we push numbers forward, we know we can help. So let's say you're going to...
Well, it might change it. If they play with three up front, it might change what he does.
Then you need that pace.
What way?
Well, because you're going to be...
There's going to be space on the wings,
there's
right?
not enough space. If you've got the two guys up front and they're shifting around, right. And you're going to leave space both sides.
So do they really need him? I mean, is that what we're getting at here? Do Real Madrid really need him? They clearly want him.
Alphonso Davies, in my opinion, would be better at left back than either Alaba when he's fit. Mm-hmm. Although Alaba, you can argue, would be a better defender, but he doesn't have the same qualities going forward that Davies has.
But you just said
Mendy.
He's better than Mendy? He's ahead of Mendy?
Absolutely. What does Mendy give you going forward? I don't think he gives you much. Is he that good defensively? No, he's not. So, absolutely. Real Madrid are better, in my opinion, with Alphonso Davies at left back, particularly with two up front, because that's his forte, getting forward, using his pace, getting balls in the box, or playing with other players.
Don, Davies to Real Madrid. What do you make of it?
I mean, what a signing that would be. I mean, Courtois at the back, Alphonso Davies, Militao, Rudiger, Carvajal, and then all the talent that we've just said. I mean, what a move that would be. I mean, listen, I think if you're a young player and you've sort of ticked Bayern off and he's doing really well there, but there's levels. There's levels when you play, even like a club like Bayern, FC Hollywood, massive, massive juggernaut of a football club. Then you add on the levels of Real Madrid. I mean, the Real Madrid, if you get linked with Real Madrid and the chance to go to Real Madrid comes around probably once or twice in your career, five or six if you're Mbappe. But if you're Alphonso Davies and you get asked to go to Real Madrid and you half fancy the move, you have to make the move and see if you're good enough.
The thing is as well, Bayern need to spend some money. They need to change their squad big time. Mm-hmm. And you might say that losing Alphonso Davies doesn't help you, but the money that you would get means you can reboot because they need to do that big time.
Yeah. I don't know how much it would be because the contract's only right now through 2025, I think, so there's only a year left. But, yeah, they'd get something for him for sure, as Alphonso Davies there linked heavily with Real Madrid and a move away from Bayern Munich. Speaking of Champions League, we'll see both Bayern Munich and Real Madrid. Shall we go one more time to the disallowed goal that just will not die? Shall we analyze this one
Who's
more time? Leipzig against Real Madrid. Leipzig's early goal waved off. You know why we're bringing it up? Because we haven't gotten a goalie's perspective. So, Casey, were they right to disallow this? Were you with your goalie union ways?
Well, I'm just trying to think that if you just bumped the goalkeeper in the back, no, it wasn't like I wouldn't necessarily have called it a foul, but you're clearly interfering with the goalkeeper's movements if you're bumping him in the back.
There you go. That's all you need to say.
And if you're interfering, then you're in an offside position. Now, what was the rule invented for? The rule was invented for a striker makes a run in behind, gets blocked, it gets whatever, the defense pushes up, and he's coming back into an onside position, clearly not involved in the play, and then the ball comes back in. Well, if you're bumping the goalkeeper in the back, you're clearly involved in the play.
Real Madrid then 1-0 winners in the first leg over Leipzig. Don, you disagree?
It shouldn't be disallowed, but I just had this sort of mental image in my head after watching the Super Bowl at the weekend. I can imagine if we got these blue cards and all of a sudden the laws start change. I can imagine these little yellow flags being thrown on the pitch and go, interference, interference. It can't be. I mean, it can't be. It can't be. I mean, for the good of the game.
What do you mean? Did the goalie get shoved in the back?
Did the goalie get shoved in the back? In the back.
You saw it on the screen. You saw it on the screen. He's interfering with the goalie.
Bump.
It's a straight.
But he's
bumped. So bumps allowed.
Well,
now,
no, but it's not a foul. It's offside. That's the question. He's offside. He's offside because he's interfering.
Offside interfering and preventing the goalie from making the play. That's the letter of the law.
That's the rule. I wouldn't have called it a foul, but he's definitely interfering with
it. It comes down to whether you believe Lunin can get there or not. That's kind of a gray zone that I think we'll have to leave for. Actually, I hope not another day because I hope we don't have to do that replay anymore. That's what, 6 days or 3 days running now on that particular play. All right, we got La Liga coming up on ESPN Plus this weekend. Make sure to catch out. All the action kicks off with Atletico Madrid against Las Palmas, bright and early Saturday morning, 8 a.m. Eastern time. Barcelona in action noon on Saturday. Real Madrid play 8 a.m. Eastern on Sunday morning. Athletic Club and Girona wrap up the match day on Monday, 3 p.m. Eastern time.
Hi, it's Mike Greenberg letting you know ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sportsbook of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me, plus many more. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today. New users get a bet reset up to $1,000 in bonus bets if your first bet doesn't win. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Let's talk some Liverpool, Stevie. The good news, of course, Mo Salah is back, but it comes with some bad news as well. Alisson Becker will miss the game against Brentford with a muscle injury. He's not the only one on the injured list, but it is a particularly important position, Stevie. How desperate are you ringing the alarm here from a Liverpool perspective?
I don't think you're ringing an alarm. I think the one thing that sticks out to me is that a goalkeeper, when you have a goalkeeper like Alisson, he can pull off a big save at the right time that'll get you the 3 points and save you not losing two. Whereas I don't think Kelleher's in that bracket. And so if we're talking about between now and the end of the season, because Kelleher's in goal, you lose 2 or 3 points. It's 2 or 3 points you can't afford to lose. That's my biggest worry. It's not that Kelleher's not a good goalkeeper, but he's not in the same class as Alisson, and I don't think he has it in his locker yet to pull off that big save when it matters most right now.
Give me the goalie perspective here.
No, I think that kind of sums it up. Is there's that you're not a liability, which is, and I agree with that. Kelleher's not a liability, but. But if you're a Liverpool team, you're going to be pushing numbers forward at times. Maybe you're going to be exposed defensively. Can your goalkeeper come up with the big save at the right time to keep it at 0-0? Then you go on to win 2-0. And it just doesn't look like Kelleher's quite there yet and clearly not on the level of Alisson.
I know I said muscle. It's a hamstring, just for clarity's sake. We always want to clarify things here on ESPN FC. Don, here's a look at the upcoming schedule. Just how significant could this be as far as a blow to Liverpool's title hopes?
No, it's big. It's big. I mean, I always trust Casey and Xhaka when they're talking about goalkeepers. But what I would say, from Kelleher's point of view, I thought he was terrific against Burnley last week when he pulled off some really, really amazing saves at crucial times. And to be honest, I think he's the best number two, I think, in the Premier League. I think he's really, really underrated. I think he's very solid. I don't think he takes too many chances. But of course, if you're Van Dijk or you're the fullbacks or you're a midfield and you see that Alisson's behind you, your number one goalkeeper, it always gives you that little bit more confidence knowing that Alisson would be in goal. But I think Kelleher's a very, very good goalkeeper in his own right.
Stevie, does it change the way, you know, if you're a Liverpool defender, maybe you approach this match, or maybe the team as a whole without Alisson back there?
It doesn't change your outlook. It'll change things that you do in a split second. You know, when you're used to playing with a goalkeeper, and when you're used to playing with Alisson in particular, you know exactly, without looking, where he's going to be, when he's going to be there. Those are all the things that you build between particularly your centre-backs and your goalkeeper, that you do things automatically because you know each other so well. When you have somebody in that you don't know as well, then you have to take the time to have a look. You have to take the time to make sure. That's the difference between being really good and being exceptional. When you take that extra second to make sure of something, that's the difference. And unfortunately, We're talking about winning the Premier League here, and that's what's going to be the difference between particularly Liverpool and City. Those little details is going to win one of them the Premier League, and that, unfortunately, goes against Liverpool.
Is it too much to say it could impact the way they play, like how they attack because of how he is with his feet versus how maybe Kelleher is with his feet?
Absolutely not. No,
Kelleher can do that job.
They'll go about it. They'll go about it the way they always have done, and they always will under Klopp. It's just, as I said, that little thing's missing when you don't have your regular keeper.
Mm. And so Liverpool then facing off against Brentford in Premier League action this weekend. Speaking of German managers, Jurgen Klinsmann is out of a job with South Korea. He's out as manager after they were eliminated in the semifinals of the Asian Cup, losing to Jordan. There you can see his record.
Bit harsh, isn't it?
Well, there's some details about what's going on behind the scenes.
Does that mean Gareth Southgate should be out of a job?
Here's an excerpt from The Athletic in which the outlet details a row inside the South Korean camp, which was apparently over ping pong. Okay, so the younger players wanted to play table tennis. The veterans did not want them to play table tennis. And in the ensuing confrontation, Heung Min Son was injured, hurt his hand. Okay. Here's the excerpt from The Athletic. It all came to a head last Monday, the night before their 2-0 semifinal defeat to Jordan, when a few of the younger players, including Lee, wanted to leave the team dinner early to play table tennis. Son objected to this and forcefully made his point, which drew a similarly forthright response from Lee. An altercation followed involving a number of players, during which Son dislocated a finger as he tried to break things up. It's also been claimed that Lee was pushed in the chest and reacted angrily. All right, weirdest thing in your careers that you've ever seen start a locker room fight or a training ground fight? Stevie?
I wouldn't say weirdest. I would say mine's funny rather than
okay,
weird.
Go on. I'll take it.
Well, so on a Monday, if we didn't have a midweek game, we'd come in on a Monday and we'd be off on the Wednesday. And when we came in on a Monday, it would be the first team squad and the reserve squad mixed together and we'd have like a five-a-side competition. And one day, I remember Phil Neal, arguably the most experienced player at Liverpool at the time, walking off because Graham Souness had convinced everybody that a goal wasn't a goal. Because we didn't use goals. Mm-hmm. We used to use jumpers, basically.
Right. So he said it went over the jumper.
Yeah.
No goal.
Graham said it. Graham was the captain at the time. And Graham said it wasn't a goal. Uh-huh. And Neal thought it was a goal and Neal took the hump and walked off. And said he wasn't playing anymore.
Wow.
So that was more funny than anything else. The Phil Neal walking off like a five-year-old.
They say I have a short fuse. Casey, you got any stories?
Halftime with a manager that would ask you a lot of questions, but they were completely rhetorical. There was never...
He wasn't looking for
an
answer.
There was never supposed to be an answer. And one of the main players had decided to give an answer. And there was a table set up in the changing room, and the manager went over the table and started strangling him during halftime, and the player had done something that he had been fined for that week, and so as cooler heads prevailed, don't worry about that fine. After he got strangled at halftime for answering a rhetorical question.
How did the second half go?
Oh, we won.
Okay, nice. Yeah.
So that also helps. That also helps.
Of the discussion. Don, your story?
I heard one on the radio the other day about Neil Warnock, who's just took the Aberdeen job, and he's had like a million clubs, and he got involved in a fight with one of his players after a game, and he obviously, as Casey said, they were both going at it, and then the manager then went in the shower, he took his clothes off, he went in the shower, and as he was having a shower, his head was still bubbling away and still boiling. He's then gone back out the shower completely naked and started wrestling the guy who he was having a fight with. But then now he's completely naked, so everyone in the dressing room is laughing, apart from Neil Warnock and the guy that he's having a wrestle with. So I can imagine that scene.
I think what you've got to realise is that in football... And I don't know about other sports, but in football, when two people start arguing or start having a scuffle or the manager's diving over the table or you're disagreeing and you're shouting and this and that, 99 times out of 100, it goes away in a matter of seconds and at the most minutes.
And really what you want to do is you want to keep it private. You know, it used to be the old adage, you know, what happens in the locker room stays in the locker room, that it doesn't get shared. It's always difficult if you're in a training ground situation where there's press there, or there's fan, and people can see kind of what happens. Clearly, there's going to be emotions. Most of the time, you just, both parties come together later. Hey, sorry, I got carried away, whatever. And then it all goes away.
Don, you got any stories of your own?
I was sorry. I just thought it was just an image that came into my mind. I had to tell a Neil Warnock story, but not so much funny. I was involved in at West Ham, and Paolo Di Canio was our centre forward. Well, Paolo was a genius of a player, but he loved to blame everyone else. And the lads will know, when a centre forward blames the midfield players then, you know, blame the centre backs for being too deep, and the centre backs blame the goalkeeper because he's not giving instructions. So Paolo started a 6-man brawl after a game. And Paolo wasn't a fighter, but he had picked Ian Pearce, who was at West Ham at the time, Christian Daly, who were pretty, pretty tough, and the goalkeeper at the time was David James. So three real hard guys and Paolo Di Canio. Well, let me tell you, Paolo Di Canio moonwalked out of that situation double quick.
All right. Premier League Fight Club. I like the sound of that. Plenty more great stories on today's edition of Extra Time. It'll be KC, Stevie, and Don taking your questions from social media. And as always, you can find it over on our ESPN FC YouTube channel. Make sure to check it out. Also over on our ESPN FC YouTube channel, the highlights from Inter Miami against Newell's Old Boys. A little Lionel Messi preseason reunion. His first club in his current club. Getting the start, 31st minute, good run, but puts the shot wide.
Yeah, I mean, it looks like the injury's better.
It's really weird to see him putting it past the post, isn't it?
Been a long preseason for Inter Miami. They've gone all over the globe here in the second half. Bourgelon makes it 1-0.
Fantastic header, great ball. Goalkeeper, no man's land.
Inter Miami have had their issues in defense during the preseason. More of it here, 83rd minute. Well, Franco Diaz makes it 1-1.
And that's just self-inflicted. I mean, there's a point in time when you just have to say, you know what, maybe this isn't the spot to play.
Tell you what, can you imagine years ago a forward outdoing a centre-back like that in a challenge?
Just a few days away from Inter Miami's season opener. It's on the 21st against RSL. Here's what Tata Martino had to say about his superstar, Lionel Messi. Quote, I see him fully recovered. It is true that we are playing him little by little. Thursday night, he played almost 60 minutes, and the idea is that he arrives well-prepared for the league debut on the 21st. He had an MRI earlier in the preseason. All right, Casey, set the bar for Inter Miami here. What are the expectations for this season with all this star power?
Well, I mean, what was the news that came out? That they're way over cap. They got to do a bunch of stuff.
President for Major League Soccer that came out and said, based on the conversations we've had, they will be compliant. So I think that'll get taken care of. You know how that goes, Stevie. You know how that goes.
Yeah, held up.
They never did that for you in the New England Revolution,
held up.
You never brought Messi to the league. Sorry, Casey.
In all honesty, I don't know. I mean, I think so much of it is going to come down to where is Leo at? How much is he going to be able to completely influence games? Is he going to have enough people around him that can support? Is defensively, are they, you know, I keep talking about balance, but are they going to be so top heavy that they're then going to be not being able to outscore opponents because they're conceding so many goals defensively? And do they really care? Do they really care about winning, or do they care about how many people can we get to an Inter Miami hashtag on Leo's Instagram?
Well, I mean, I think that's maybe what Inter Miami and Major League Soccer would want. But I think Lionel Messi and Inter Miami players, based on what we see in Leagues Cup, I mean, we could say that they're pretty committed, right?
Well, and if you take from where they went,
and the impact they had was immediate last
correct.
Year. I mean, that was the worst team in the league.
Yes, correct. And then they became
now you got a year,
competitive.
A full off season, a full preseason. You built a team. Tata Martino's, you know, fully in control.
But
I'm just saying, I think the bar should be pretty high.
Well, if you're talking about that you're being allowed to significantly overspend over the cap, then yes, you should spend over the cap and win everything. But I don't know if they're there.
You know how the league works. It's very random, especially in playoffs. Mm. Is it too much to say that it's title or bust for them, given all the guys that they brought in? And given the kind of randomness of this league, it's not the Premier League. It's not a 38-game season.
Let's be honest. Everybody expects them to win the title now.
Should they?
Well, yeah.
Mm-hmm. If you've been given special permission,
if you really spend all that money and bring all these players, all these experienced guys in, then yes. The question for me is, and I guess the good thing is Tata Martino's been through it before, right? And he knows it's a long season. Mm-hmm. And Tata Martino will know that they can't go hell for leather from the first game all the way through the playoffs to the mm-hmm. final mm-hmm. and win it. He's got to know that either in games he's playing half a team a lot of the time or enough times, or in training they're doing nothing all week in order to be hitting the heights with the games. Because you can't do both. And you can't play at 1,000 miles an hour the way they did when Messi arrived till the last game of the season, because you saw how tired they were.
Yep.
I mean, so this is going to be down to the manager. Is the manager going to say, right, I'm going to decide when we play half a team, when these guys get a rest, to look after them? Because A, you can't do it, and B, you can't do it with older players.
All right, I got a question for you, Stevie. So how does it work after all the criticism that happened in Hong Kong, that now all the away teams have been told you can triple your prices when Messi comes to town, and then Messi goes, yeah, I'm taking today off. Mm. How does that go down?
Same as it did with Beckham. Same thing happened with Beckham.
Well, remember when it happened with Messi in Chicago, they gave, not refunds, but credits so you could come back to a fire game.
That's where Tato's got to be strong.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he can't, he's,
He got bullied into playing Messi in Saudi Arabia.
Well,
there was something that motivated him in Saudi Arabia. I can't figure out what it might have been.
He can just stand on the field, but he's good. Again, he's good because he's got Beckham on the board. He's got Beckham.
Yep. Yep.
Who understands?
Beckham can play now.
Yeah. I tell you what, you could throw him on for 20 minutes and give Messi a rest. Mm-hmm. But Beckham will understand. And again, I guess it will come down to them as well.
Yep.
If they're only interested in winning MLS Cup,
well,
then leave it to Tato, let him do what he wants, he'll sort it out, he's experienced enough, he's been through it before, he'll play a reserve team when he fancies it, as long as they get in the playoffs, having a good season, that should be enough for the owners, because if the goal's MLS Cup, then that's how they've got to do it. Listen, if the goal is to make more money every time they step on the field, then that's going to mess up winning MLS Cup at the end of the season.
And remember, for Messi, it's not just Argentina responsibilities, Copa America, World Cup qualifiers. There's some talk of him maybe playing in the Olympics. So that's the other question, right? How much is he
play all those games?
he going to be around for this Inter-Miami side throughout the MLS season. Elsewhere in American soccer, there were some very interesting comments from the U.S. Women's National Team captain, Lindsey Horan, recently about American fans. She's now apologizing for those comments. It was about a week and a half ago when Horan told The Athletic that American fans, well, most of them aren't smart. Here's what she had to say yesterday. Quote, first and foremost, I would like to apologize to our fans. Some of my comments were poorly expressed, and there was a massive lesson learned for me. When I think about our fans, I love them so much. The soccer
They're
culture.
They're not very smart, but I love them.
Steady. The soccer culture in America is changing and growing so much in such a positive way. The last thing I ever wanted to do was to offend anyone in that manner. So again, I deeply, deeply apologize. Casey, you have worn the captain's armband for the U.S. men. What do you make first of the comments that American fans aren't smart and then about the apology?
I mean, I don't understand. I mean, she's 29, right?
Mm-hmm.
You've been around the block. I get it when you're a young kid and you've not been in front of the press and you kind of say something and later, you know, somebody taps you on the shoulder and goes, what were you doing? You're like, well, I didn't really know. But to be in the position that she's in, to say what she said, and then I guess for me it's a little disingenuous because it wasn't, oh, my God, what did I just say? Oh, I'm so sorry. It's 10 days, 2 weeks later, mm-hmm. when now we're preparing for a camp, that it's like, oh, geez, I better apologize for this. Or somebody said, you better apologize for this. So, yeah, that one, That's a head scratcher. That's when you just don't understand how that happened.
Yeah, it's hard to imagine. Too late for the apology?
Too late.
That's what I'm with Stevie. It's too late.
So Saturday we got a doubleheader. Plymouth Argyle against Leeds. That one's 7:30 a.m. Eastern time here on Plus. And then at 10 a.m. Eastern time it is Leicester City against Middlesbrough. Casey Keller against Kay Murray in that one. All right, that'll do it for this edition of ESPN FC. Thanks for joining us.
Can we get another story from Don?
Stevie, I'm Seb. Well, story from somebody that he knows, that he heard on the radio.
Not anymore.
Extra time starts now. Stick around. Hey there, everybody. Welcome into the ESPN FC studios. Don Hutchison, Steve Nichol, Casey Keller, and a very excited Seb here with you. Don, first question for you on this Friday. Percentage chance, what a way to start, for Chelsea to get something out of the City game. Ooh.
Zero. Zero.
Wow.
Absolutely zero. I'm betting City win this game by more than 3 goals. They will walk all over Chelsea.
Ooh. Zero? Zero?
I don't think zero.
Because there's like a wild card percentage with Chelsea, right?
I'm kind of gun shy after Craig Bolley and I did Aston Villa against Chelsea. And we did like half an hour before the game, and we annihilated Chelsea. We're not getting nothing. They got no chance. They're rubbish. They can't defend.
That's in the cup,
they can't score goals. I know, but and we're coming at half time. It was 2-0. And we're like, oh. Didn't see that coming. So I wouldn't say 0%. It's pretty low, but it's not zero.
Stevie, if FSG miss out on Xabi Alonso and sign Thomas Tuchel as Klopp's replacement, would you be angry?
Yeah, I wouldn't be happy.
Why?
Have you seen Bayern play this year?
Yes, I have.
Right, there you go. That's all you need to do.
Okay. Don, what do you think?
No chance. No chance. He'd be 10th on the list at best.
All right.
Champions League winner? I mean,
well,
we can't so easily dismiss him, surely.
So you're already saying he's going to get fired by Bayern?
Just told you.
Yes.
No, zero. Yeah, percentage.
I think he might be available.
You want percentages?
Zero?
Don't deny it. Zero.
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 Mitch asks, are dressing rooms havens for practical jokes, like baseball clubhouses are known to be? Who is the biggest prankster you ever played with? Stevie, I have read your book, and they didn't say you were the biggest prankster, but you were in kind of the middle of a lot of the pranks, or maybe the victim of a lot of the wind-ups.
Listen, every dressing room, every single day of the week, there's something going on, and somebody's trying to do something. Every single day.
If not, there's like a problem.
I mean, everybody's driving in the morning thinking what they can do, who they can wind up. I mean, it's just the way it is.
That's true professionalism.
And absolutely, I got done for fun. I was 19.
Yeah.
I'd barely gone outside the town I lived in until I was 19. And all of a sudden, I was put in a dressing room, in football terms, with the European champions and probably the best team on the planet. But they were also European champions and the best team on the planet at winding people up. So you got me landing in the middle of that. So I ended up getting pranked rather a lot. Yeah.
Don, best prank that you've heard somebody else talk about on the radio?
To be fair, Sabby, I was known to prank a few. The best one I had, playing for Everton, I played with a good mate of mine called Franny Jeffers. He was the number 9 at the time. And when you hand your tickets in to like friends and family, I always used to say to the secretary, like, who's coming today, like, who's watching, just to try and get like an adrenaline spike, like someone say, oh, Kevin Keegan's come to watch the England players, who is England manager, or Craig Brown might be watching the Scotland players, just to give you a little bit of something extra so you can go into the game knowing there's a lot of people watching. So I asked the girl and she said, Kevin Keegan, the England manager, is coming to watch the game today. So I looked at the opposition, weren't many England players playing, and I figured it was Franny Jeffers he came to watch. So just before the game, I put DP in his underpants, and it's fair to say he had an absolute shocker in the game while Kevin Keegan came to watch him.
What is DP?
What?
What did he say? What, he put what in his underpants?
Like an icy hot. Like a.
Oh, yeah. Ouch. Yeah.
Burning.
Awful.
I shall tell you one. Good, I was in the book. I went in one morning and sat down, and there was brown envelopes all the way around on everybody's where they sat. And I've never said a word. And I'd Kenny Dalglish sat on my left-hand side, and he turned to me and he went, "Where's your brown envelope?" And I went, "What do you mean?" He goes, "Well, did you get a brown envelope?" I went, "No." He went, "Why not?" I went, "I don't know." I said, "What is it?" He goes, "Well, you were in the team photograph, weren't you?" I went, "Yeah." He said, "Well, that's the sponsorship money for the team photograph. Everybody's just got it." I was like, "I didn't get one." He went, "What are you going to do?" I went, "What can I do?" He goes, "Well," he said, "well, you got two choices. You can either say nothing or you can stick up for yourself." So I'm like, "Well," I said, "well, who do you speak to?" He goes, "Well, you speak to the manager. He's the one that gives them it." So he'd wound me up.
Yeah.
And I went, right. So I got my training gear on, put my trainers on. I went down the corridor, chapped on the manager's door. So his secretary opened the door, said, "Yeah." I said, "Can I speak to the boss?" And she went, "Sure." And goes in, Bob Paisley sat at his desk. And he goes, "Yeah, what is it?" I went, I says, "Boss," I said, "I know I've only been here such and such time," I said, "but I don't think it's right. I didn't get a brown envelope." And he went, "What?" I said, "I never got a brown envelope." He went, he said, "You know what?" He said, "Here, you can have mine." And I went, "Well, why are you giving me yours?" He goes, "Well, have a look then." So I opened it up, and it was a tax form. It was a tax form to be filled in for the sponsorship money they'd had from the previous year when I wasn't even at the club. So.
Was he in on it? Was Paisley in on it? No.
No, not at all. Okay. He was like, "Ah, get out." I had to go back in the dressing room. They're all like, "Ah." I mean, that was it. Brutal. Things like that were going on every day.
Casey?
Yeah, I mean, I got. Ben Thatcher used to do things that it definitely got over the top a little
really?
Bit. But yes. Yeah, let's just say there's certain things that were left in a shoebox that was left in your locker over the weekend, and you probably didn't want to know what was in that shoebox. But you had a pretty good idea. Your olfactory senses had a pretty good idea when you came back in on Monday what was in that shoebox.
Wouldn't that be counterproductive, though? Isn't he going to have to smell that then in his own dressing room?
Yeah, but it's not in his locker.
Right. Is the kit man always the most popular person at the club? Stevie?
Popular?
Yeah. I guess not. Boy.
No.
Steve Nicol lashes out at Liverpool kit man.
No.
No?
No, everybody.
Who is the most popular
everybody's
person?
Everybody's always nice.
E-lady?
Yeah.
Who's the kind of non-football most popular person at the club?
Yeah, the girls doing the lunches and the... Well, again, different times. You've got proper chefs and all that now, but in our day...
You had a staff. You had a staff of people making you food.
Well, in our day, we had the two girls, May... Can't remember the Don. Can you remember the other girl's name? They would make our lunch, so we would bring some food in and they would... make it for us, like Scotch pies or beans. And so they would actually make it for you.
Prepare it.
And they were there to make sure the place was clean and tidy, nothing else. But the girls would make food for you.
Any good kit man stories over there?
I mean, a lot of them were good fun, right? I mean, just good guys. And, you know, for me, I was pretty... You know, I was kind of high maintenance when it came to being goalkeeper. You had a bunch of extra gear, so you always wanted to make sure they were happy so they could make sure they brought everything that you wanted and you needed. But
the only kit man I ever known that was actually miserable was the Scottish kit man. I won't tell you his name, that wouldn't be right.
Okay.
But after games with Scotland, you were only allowed to keep the top. You weren't allowed to take the shorts or the socks, right? And so what people would do is you would take somebody else's.
Right.
Because as soon as the game finished,
right.
As soon as the game finished, this guy was in and trying, as soon as you took something off, he was like,
like they were taking it out of his
straight over picking. He was straight over picking it up, right? And then put them all down and then he'd count them and he could see him doing this. And he'd be coming over going, "Where's your..." And he'd be like, "I've no idea. Because somebody else had taken mine." And in the World Cup, what we did was, his room We got the keys to his room because the staff went out one night. So we got the keys to his room, and the great big cases where they carry all the kit in.
Mm-hmm.
What we'd done, we'd gone in his room and we'd got all the cases and topped them all up on top of each other so that when he opened the door, all you could see was silver case. You couldn't get in the room. And he'd taken the light bulbs out his lights, moved his bed to another part of the room.
Wow.
I mean, did all kinds.
So literally the least popular person is what you're describing to me.
And when he came back from the night out and opened his door, he took the hump and said he was going to sleep in the physio's room on the physio bed, which is just a table.
Right, right.
Unless the people who did it moved all the stuff, he wasn't moving back to his room.
Oh, really? Throw a fit?
So miserable. Honest to goodness.
All right, guys, when you decided to retire, who was the first person you told? Did anyone try to convince you to keep playing on? Don, how did that go for you?
I went to Marbella. I had a place in Marbella at the time. I was single. So when I didn't actually know I was retired. I was 37 and the phone just never rang. So I left. Where did I leave? Luton Town. And I went away for my holidays. The phone never rang. Season kicked off. And I thought, I'm just going to go to Marbella then. So I went to Marbella, had a good time. The phone just never rang. So that's how brutal football can be at times. It's not particularly sensitive. If your phone doesn't ring, no one wants you. You're done, your history. And then all of a sudden, once you've done your time in Marbella and you can't drink anymore and you start getting cold sores everywhere and styes because you're run down, you got to get back to the real world and get back to work.
Went to Marbella and never left. What about you, Stevie? Boston Bulldogs days?
Yeah.
You were kind of retired by then, though, right? You were playing.
Yeah,
managing.
But I officially told my wife Eleanor because I'd halved somebody in two and decided that time to finish.
Yeah,
because I was so slow and I started kicking people, doing, you know. Anyway, I did this guy for fun. I mean, right across his knees, and I was on the bus on the way back and I felt terrible. I actually started thinking about it. I thought, you know what, that's not right. So that was it, and that was me. I stopped.
Yeah,
that was USISL, is that right? Was that the old American
USL,
second division or whatever?
Yeah, I think that's the tricky part. I think that most people get retired. They don't actually get to choose to retire. And I think for myself, you know, when I moved home and, you know, had an opportunity to, you know, with the new franchise in Seattle and to be able to be a part of it. And then, you know, I played another year after my original contract. And then I was kind of looking at, you know, I was, you know, going to be, you know, at the end of the season, you know, a couple weeks before my 42nd birthday. And I'm thinking, you know, what I didn't want to do was get into that situation where my quality of play just drops. And then everyone's thinking, why are you still playing? You know, and I still was able to perform. I thought, you know, let's finish on my terms and let's do this the right way without then having an issue and not being able to perform, because the time was going to catch up sooner than later.
Another one for you, Casey. Your Mount Rushmore of Premier League goalies.
Okay. Oof. Like Premier League, not...
Premier League era.
So from 92 onward. Schmeichel.
Okay.
Schmeichel's got to be in.
You get four on Mount Rushmore.
Right.
My history lesson.
You're going to help me with this. So Schmeichel's got to be in there. Don, what do you think? Schmeichel for sure.
Allison.
Ooh, okay.
Yeah, you got your Chelsea. What's his face?
Yeah,
David Peter James. It's not David Peter James. Check. David Seaman. David Seaman.
Seaman would be up there for sure.
I mean, we're at four right now. Schmeichel, Allison, Cech, Seaman. Is that the top four all time?
I think so.
Is Allison in there?
Yeah, I was gonna say I'm not sure Allison's quite there yet, Don.
Ooh.
I think he's moving in that direction for sure.
He's trending in the right direction. You got Schmeichel.
Check.
Seaman.
Who are we missing there?
Chaka his
lot.
The Dutch guy.
Van der Sar.
Yeah, that's a good shot. Here's your guy.
Allison's better than him.
Yeah, but really? I don't know if anybody, but has he had
the career he's had?
Yeah, what I was going to say, has he had the maybe well, the it's amount of
now we're getting into tough of work because guys who haven't finished their career, obviously.
Right.
You know, so
because normally you're not going to be if we went, have a statue of you while you're still playing.
If we went retired, it would be Schmeichel, Cech, Seaman, Van der Sar.
Yeah, that sounds
pretty
good.
Solid.
Well, I'm okay with that.
It's pretty good top four. All right, last one. For all, do you guys feel like our lack of pickup soccer culture in the U.S. is a big disadvantage for our youth technical development compared to countries like Brazil or Spain, where it's easy to find soccer being played on the streets and smaller size fields? I don't feel like soccer on the streets is unique to Brazil and Spain.
Well, but
it's maybe unique to a different era. Like you played soccer on the streets, yeah?
Yeah.
Well, yeah,
in Scotland now, are they playing soccer on the streets?
No.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
No, I think absolutely.
I don't think that's just a U.S. thing, though. It is, though. We don't have it here. We definitely don't have it.
Well, our culture, and I think what had happened was, is also I think one of the big issues that U.S. culture has, particularly on the soccer side of it, is the options that kids have. And, you know, no, everybody was playing football, right? That's what they were going to play, and maybe they were forced to play something else at school, maybe a little rugby, maybe a little cricket, and those. Yeah. But everybody wanted to play football. You know, here, you know, kids have, I'm going to be a BMX guy. I'm going to be a skateboarder. I'm going to be, you know.
But even the ones, case you want to play soccer, don't have pickup to go to. It's easier for me to find an adult pickup game in D.C. than there's no kids pickup games. And there's thousands of kids playing any city, but certainly in D.C. And you would never find just kids on their own.
There's definitely playing. A level of organization.
Not never, but.
And I noticed that. When I moved home and my daughter started playing, if it was something organized, she was in, 100%. It was a captain's practice, it was this, but the idea of just a couple of her friends going to kick the ball out in the yard, never gonna happen, ever.
Do you know what else doesn't happen when it's just a couple people kicking the ball out in the yard? Nobody's making money off it. And that is why, at the end of the day, Casey.
Well, there's definitely.
That is why. The U.S. system is set up the way it is.
Because
you can't monetize pickup soccer. That's the truth there. A topic for Football Americas, perhaps.
Wow.
Deep dive. You want to join us for that edition, Stevie? Maybe we'll buzz Don in so he can tell us a story he heard on the radio.
Sorry, I'm busy.
Oh, Stevie. One day I'll get you back on Football Americas because you have been on the show before. All right, we'll be back tomorrow, ESPN FC Studios, for the next edition of the show. Please join us.